Now, in this part two, we're going to look at the first reading from Exodus 22 and the psalm, which in its own way reflects some of the attitude, teaching of the first reading. First reading goes like this. The Lord says, I'm looking at the psalm. And the ger, an alien, you see, you shall not oppress or molest, because you were gerim yourselves in Egypt. Don't forget it. So what's a ger? You have to kind of understand the culture a bit, you see. Nowadays we have if a guy from Cuba is standing on a street corner and somebody robs his wallet, he can call the cop over and say, that fed running away down there, he took my wallet. Guy would toot his whistle and they'd catch him. But that's in a world of police forces, and that's not the ancient world. Your police force was your family. That's why they wanted big families, especially lots of boys. Because the only one who looked after whose principal job was to look after the poor was the king. There was no police force. If this fellow from Cuba runs off with my wallet, I call up my brother, my cousins. I say, look, he's about 5'6", 5'8". He ran in that direction. Go get him. They'll go get him. You see? And they are my goyim. See, they are my... No, not goyim. The word will come in a minute. Goyim is another word. They are my protectors. You see? And so... that's all you got. Now, in this culture, it is the primary role of the king to take care of the poor. When King Hussein was the king in Jordan, I don't know what the present fellow does, I think it was every Thursday afternoon, the whole afternoon, he sat there and people came in to have him adjudicate. This, my brother-in-law stole my cow. Now, you got to make him give it back. And so then the king has to listen. Is that really his cow? You know? Well, then you have to give it back. The king did that. But so did the bishop. There's a beautiful story. There's a beautiful story about Maximus Saig, who was one of the patriarchs of the Melkites. And so he had his patriarchal palace in Damascus. Well, see, the religious leaders are the same. Well, when people are coming in all day and all night, you know, patriarch, you got to solve this, you got to, you know, tell my wife to come home, you got to, whatever. You don't get much work done. So he said to his servants, close the door down there, the entrance to the courtyard. I'm not getting anything done this way. And so they closed the door. So the people saw the door closed, they couldn't get in. Then comes the feast day of Sayyidina Maximus. So the elders of the city, Damascus, go up to him. And they say, Sayyidina, you are the light of our life. When you rise, we rise. When you set, we set. Now, open that door down there. We have a right to come and talk to you. You're our leader. So he had to open the door. I'm trying to create for you this world which is so different than ours, huh? We got cops and National Guard and I don't know, all kinds of things. There, the king and the Lord looked after everybody, and so did your family. That's the way it went. So that's why God, I must try to find that word now. It's at the end of Psalm 19. Isn't it funny? Must be age. It says, Suri, my rock and my, just a second, I'll have it. You can get to heaven without knowing this, but this is a word, it's a precious word And I don't have it straight. Let me find out what it is here now. It's the end of the psalm. Suri for Goeli. That's the word I'm looking for. Goel. That means my near relatives. And they got to get me out of trouble. If I go into debt, they got to raise the money to get me out of debtor's prison. That's what debtor's prisons were. They stuck a guy in there, and believe me, they weren't like, cost us $35,000 or $50,000 to keep a guy in jail for a year. Wouldn't cost more than 35 cents to keep them in those days. Your family had to bring the food. It was a dirty dirt floor. I mean, you wanted to get out of there as fast as you could, so your family raised the money and got you out. If it was like a debtor's prison. All of this is necessary. So who don't have rights? The people who don't have anybody to fight for them. So that would be what? The widow, the orphan, and the stranger. Ger is the word for this stranger. Translated in this text, an alien. Somebody who's there, but his family is in Syria or who knows where it is, and he's there. So if somebody beats him up, there's nobody to go after the people who beat him up. Somebody steals. You understand what I'm trying to say? You can oppress Gerim because there's nobody that's got to take vengeance. They're very helpless. And so the text is saying, you see, you shall not molest or oppress an alien. Remember, you were aliens yourself. You were Gerim yourself. You were down there in Egypt. That wasn't your country. It wasn't your language. It wasn't your clans. You had a lot of people there, but you were without rights. If you appeal to the king of Egypt, he'd say, look, you're my slave. Shut up. Go back to work. That's very important, that vulnerability. It's still true. With all the police forces, though I must say, having worked with people who have come sometimes seeking asylum over here, I'm so proud of our system. They find bus tickets for them, help them with food stamps. We do have a beautiful, compassionate system for taking care of the Gerim who come to our culture. And I must say that. Okay. You shall not wrong any widow or orphan. It's the same thing, right? If I'm a widow, I don't have any husband to fight for me. I might have some children, some sons, but maybe not. Depends on when I was widowed. You see? In other words, and now listen what our Lord says. If you ever wrong them and they cry out to me, I will surely hear their cry. The king can be nice, but I'm God. And these are the people I care for the most. The ones who have nobody else to care for them. Nobody else to stick up for their rights. My wrath will flare up, and I will kill you with the sword. And then your own wives will be widows, and your own children orphans. Think about that. Then there'll be nobody to protect them. So do not oppress those who don't have a big family of males to stick up for them. I remember once a situation arose, too hard to describe, but the upshot was that this clan got together to figure out what they were going to do about this situation. There were more than 120 men in this house, and they were debating what they were going to do about this. They're all Christians. One of the solutions was proposed, we're going to go kill this guy. In other words, their Christianity needed a little bit of help. You see, so that's what he's saying. Remember, you know, if you oppress these people, I can kill you. And then your own family will be that helpless. That, by the way, that's a good example of how historical work can lend intelligibility to the text. Because you have to know what the king's duty were. For instance, it says here, O Lord, endow the king with your own fair judgment, the son of the king with your saving justice, that he may rule your people with justice and your poor with fair judgment. That's the role of the king. You see? So then this whole text makes so much more sense. Now what? Now your heart has to be engaged. I mean, you went into the, go down walking in the city and somebody come, especially an elderly woman, she only speaks Arabic or Russian, or, and you know a couple of words, you've got to help her. She's a gerah, you know, she's a ger here. At least help her find her family, something. So if you lend money to one of your poor neighbors among my people, you shall not act like an extortioner toward him by demanding interest from him. You lend to the poor, you don't say, I'm going to lend you $100. Next week, I expect $105 back. Now, our whole economy, you see, is built on interest. And there's some logic to that. If I lend you a bushel of wheat and you go plant it, that bushel of wheat is going to yield, let's say, 20 bushels of wheat. So in effect, I'm lending you 20 bushels of wheat. So when you pay me back, I expect the bushel and another bushel. That's interest. But it makes sense. Now, when the interest gets exorbitant, when all the government's playing with interest for their own interest, that's something else again. But it's not awful. Now, if you take your neighbor's cloak as a pledge, like I want to borrow your wagon so I can bring in my corn. Okay, well, then leave your cloak here. Well, don't keep that cloak overnight if he's a poor man. He's going to be sleeping on the ground in harvest time. He's got to wrap himself up because not so much in the city, but out in the country, the Arabs call the desert a cold place heated by the sun. At night, it's cold. When we were in Sinai, we always slept inside the sleeping bag at night. So, you shall return it to him before sunset. For this cloak of his is the only covering he has for his body. What else has he to sleep in? If he cries out to me, I will listen. For I am, and you might expect, because we've worked with these Hebrew words so much, I am compassionate. Guess, what would that word be? Ani hanun. I am compassionate. I'm not going to let that poor man. You're going to hear from me if you try that. You see? He didn't pay you back all that he should have by nightfall. Give him his cloak, for heaven's sake. Now do you see that there's a humanity that can be offended against? Oh, my Lord. You see, as Psalm 9 says, for the needy is not forgotten forever. Not forever does the hope of the poor come to nothing. Arise, Adonai. Human strength shall not prevail. This is important, and this is the theme of our liturgy today. Care. See, care for those. It's inscribed in our hearts, the natural law, that we care for the weak and the powerless. We care for the hungry. And if we don't, and we care for the children in the womb, they have nobody. These are not orphans, you know. They're in a womb. But they have a right to live. And so the Lord appeals for them as well. All right, that's the theme for this Sunday, beautifully articulated in this text from the book of Exodus.